Saul, do you make it out to Utah much?
Not as often as I'd like.
I think you should check it out. I think you'd dig Provo. I think you could do very well there.
I'll look into it.
That was great, Steve. Right. Don't worry about it. Hi, everyone. It's This Week in Mormons is happening. We're doing it. All of this audio is going to be there for your enjoyment. But thank you for taking the time to tune in this week. We know that there are many podcasts, and we are grateful that you choose This Week in Mormons for your listening pleasure. And we hope that this week we will talk about stuff that matters to you, just as a little bit of a primer with what's going on. We've got some updates on the BYU Honor Code sexual assault situation. A lot of really uplifting stuff this week. Opioid addiction in Utah, blind triplets in D.C., lightning destroys Moroni and Bountiful. But there are fun things going on, too. Temple open houses, fantasy books. Our own Al Doan was on BYU TV over the weekend. Lots of fun things are happening. We'll talk about all of it. But before we get to that, I have an announcement. That is that Al is not here this week. He is in Italy right now, insisting that his life is difficult and that he has reason to be stressed and whatever else, even though he's like sitting in a villa in the Tuscan countryside right now, too busy, too moving around too much to record a show. Now, so you know, we've done these shows in all sorts of places. Al once recorded from his car, picking up library Wi-Fi and a parking structure in Boulder, Colorado. We have both been in, he's been in Polynesia and I've been in Denmark and we've made it work. But for whatever reason, he couldn't do it this week. And that's okay. Because we're lucky to be joined by our fill-in co-host, friend of the show, Steve Solberg is here, everybody.
All give right. Steve a round of applause. I happen to be Al's sometimes roommate. So it feels like there's a connection.
How often do you guys see each other? You travel a lot for work. You're a comedian. And Al kind of goes in and out doing a lot of stuff. So how often do you overlap?
I would say, a total of maybe 5 days a month. So.
Okay. Now, during those 5 days, do you really maximize them? Do you just spend all your time together going and getting
no,
you know, some Carl's Jr. and just living the dream in West Valley City and really just maximizing suburbia for all of us?
We do maximize somewhat. Like we've got a breakfast place now that we go out to eat at, Ogie's. So I'm just gonna go ahead and make a plug for Ogie's.
This Week in Mormons is brought to you by Ogie's, everybody.
They have a huge breakfast burrito. And
don't try the skip scramble.
No.
Don't try the skip scramble.
You'll have a bowel movement really fast. Maybe that's good, though. I don't know what you want out of your life. So maybe that's what you want.
So Steve, what's going on in the world of clean comedy and stuff? You have shows coming up. How are things going? You can plug stuff, whatever you want.
You know what? I've been doing a lot of Ragnar Relay stuff, so I've been on the road with that a ton.
That is
when
are you doing it as a joke? Is there a long? Is this a long form like segment where it's going to be a comedic video, or are you for real doing a Ragnar?
No, I do their announcing, so I'm working on. Yeah, so I'm actually running them.
Okay,
so yeah, if you're running like the Wasatch Back Relay, I'll see you at the start line and at the finish line there, where I'm going to be marrying somebody. I'm going to marry a couple at the finish line. Yeah.
For real. You are an ordained.
Yeah, I hopped online and did that one.
Is there a conflict of interest there when you're Mormon? Because, you know, typically only our bishops do civil marriages. Is there an issue there?
I have to admit that I did wonder about it a little bit, because there is this feeling like I'm marrying someone, but not in the real way. Like, you know, like it's like...
just in the legal way.
Ugh. But also kind of humorous.
Ugh.
Because, I mean, the fact that you can get one like that fast. You just go online... ministerial license, prove that you're a human being and that you you know, exist basically in the United States. You're a citizen, blah, blah, and there you go. You're ready to marry people, which seems a little silly. But, and it also lends to why people think,
sure,
because comedians right now, it is such a hot topic to sort of make fun of marriage and be like, yeah, good luck having a monogamous relationship for the rest of your life. Like, it's just a everyone thinks of it as really stupid. Because if you're not living a lifestyle where you say, yeah, I'm going to live in a dedicated relationship, I mean, it does seem stupid. Like, if you're not, if you don't have that mindset, then it's like, yeah, why wouldn't you just do whatever you want, you know? So.
Well, I agree. It makes sense. I'm a big proponent of marriage and all that it entails. But like you said, when you step out of it, and remove my own belief system, my own morals and ethics and everything around marriage, you understand why some people don't
care. Right, right.
And why they don't see value in it, or why they might even say, I'm happy being in a committed relationship, but why do I need to sign anything? And like, what difference does it make? Which is sad, but I totally get where people are coming from and why they
have that point of view. In a completely selfish way, I am totally fine with that, with people having this, like, there being this sort of popularity around the concept of saying marriage is dumb. Because then, in a weird way, saying I believe in marriage and I believe in a monogamous relationship eventually becomes sort of a unique thing. And that's in the world of entertainment, being unique is always an advantage. And so...
Now... That said, though, you are in Utah, so do you feel like it's, you know, the novelty of it is not, would not be as strong in Utah because you know, hashtag families, hashtag attorney,
right, right,
hashtag love.
Yeah, yeah. In Utah, it's maybe not as unique. You know, it is funny though because just the way entertainment is in general, there's not as many sort of traditional Utah Mormons as you would expect who are doing stand-up.
That's understandable.
Yeah, yeah, it's like me and like three or four other guys. I mean, there's a maybe more than that, but it's a pretty small handful.
As far as I'm concerned, it's just you and Ryan Hamilton.
Yeah,
that's it, right? I mean, there's nobody else.
There's like a guy in California. There was a great comic out of Tennessee, but he unfortunately passed away, which is so sad. Okay. Yeah, he was hit by a drunk driver. He had just barely got married, like, in the temple a month before, and got hit by a drunk driver. Super sad. But, there's a few more guys.
Well, we should end the show right now.
That's a good topic to bring up. So, everyone,
that was good.
Sometimes dreams come true, and sometimes they don't.
Okay, and you should say that when you're marrying to people. What, this weekend, next week? When
2 weeks. Yeah.
2 weeks. And they arranged this just because, are these, I'm assuming, participants in the Ragnar?
You know what? It's further they than that. Get... It, but anyways, yeah. It's like three or four weeks.
But it's Ragnar runners, and they want to get married after they do the race.
Yeah,
is that what this is?
Yeah, they're excited to get married. And I told them to finish last was my advice. Because they were like, we want you to do it. And I was like, okay, well, you guys finish last, and I'll for sure marry you.
So yeah, like, how does one announce at Ragnar? How do you, you know, because it's not the kind of sport where you're not calling plays or anything. So
no.
Like you said, is it just beginning and the end? You just show up and you kind of just announce
really,
people coming across the line? Or
that's
do you
exactly
talk strategy?
It.
Do you talk about the drafting technique they're using? Like, do you really get into it?
It is such a short moment in their race. Like, my... you know, participation with them and their race is very brief. I start the race and I finish the race. Now, that being said, the start line takes, you know, I'll be there from 5 a.m. till 4 p.m. And then finish line day, I'll be there from, 8 a.m. till probably 10 or 11 p.m. So it's a long thing.
It's
but
a long day.
All you're doing is I'm at the start line. I'm getting you excited and sending you off on your little journey or big journey, however you want to view it. And then at the finish line, just welcoming them back. It's a little different because I do a variety of like just kind of joking with people and trying to showcase sponsors and stuff like that. But
So you're not, are you up in a booth, or are you kind of a man on the street down there actually like greeting the people and kind of playing with them and teasing them and stuff as they come in on a one-on-one basis?
I do a man on the street version of it. I've done some events where, I'll be up in a booth and stuff like that. Even then, you can kind of mess with people. It's a little bit of a voice of God situation where
fun.
I guess he can see me, you know. And so that's fun as well. But yeah, it is very man on the street and stuff like that.
Okay, I've got a challenge for you, and I want you here and now to promise me you will do this.
Okay.
Before I even tell you what it is. For 1 hour while you are doing it, I want you to do it like a Billy Eichner thing. You need to do it just like that, where you're freaking out and going crazy, just like Billy Eichner.
Just going nuts, like
the rest of it. You don't have to, but for one random hour, just go nuts like Billy Eichner would in New York City.
And I think everyone will believe it, like that type of stuff.
Just way over the top, just freaking out. You should, get some inspiration on YouTube. It's probably there.
Where he seems semi-angry when he's...
he does. He yells at people when they don't give him what he wants.
That would be challenging. I would like
It'll be a great hour. It'll change things up. It might even give you a second wind when you're getting kind of tired at 2 p.m. You know,
congratulations, you idiots. You're like, just where he... Yeah. I like his style. It does always make me laugh. Didn't he do one with Will Ferrell recently? And it almost seemed like Will Ferrell was like... This is like the first time I've seen Will Ferrell comedically feel like he was playing catch-up a little bit.
Really? Okay, how funny.
It was like he was... Because he's just yelling at people.
Yeah,
and,
basically.
Oh, it was... you know what? It wasn't recent. It was old. But it was... He did it for Elf, because Elf was like 10 years old this past Christmas, I think. Something like that.
It was a couple years ago then. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And he was like, what's your favorite Christmas movie? And they'd say whatever. And they were like, wrong, it's Elf. Who is in Elf? And the people would look around and they're like, And Will Ferrell's standing right there.
Yeah.
But he's so aggressive that I think people get nervous and they can't think straight. And they're like, I don't know. And he'd be like, him, you idiot. And then run to the next person, which was so hilarious. But anyway,
so building on that, for the past few years, you've also done the Utah State Fair. I've seen many videos of you, hawking twice fried potatoes and deep fried butter and all the good family fun. Will you be state fairing this year? Is it happening again?
They actually just contacted me just like a few weeks back and said, let's do this again. I think it might be our last year doing it, so we'll try to make it big.
Why?
Well,
tell us your secrets here on the show.
My secret is that I'm friends with the guy who was booked to do their advertising and sort of that stuff. So he just knows me and says, hey, let's do this. So hopefully I'll be able to do it.
You're the face of Utah. Like, who is Darren Tufts at this point? No one even knows. It's all
you. Nobody even knows. Darren who?
Exactly.
Except for he still does the gas commercials. So.
Oh, he still does the Sinclair ones. And I guess he also produces the, one of the BYU TV shows, the one where they do nice thing for people.
Is that like April?
Random Acts? Random Acts. He's a writer or a producer for Random Acts.
Oh, is he really? I just saw one of my buddies is on that show. This is funny because I guess I don't watch BYU TV. But yeah, one of my buddies is on that show. And I'm like, oh, no way.
I never did either until this weekend. Like, I don't get it. We don't have cable or anything. We're true millennials here. We've cut the cord. No cable for us.
Wow.
But BYU TV, the problem is, of course, a lot of the apps don't have it, at least the ones I have for my streaming box. I don't have a Roku. I've got an Android one. But they still don't have a dedicated, like, Android TV app. But they finally updated their Android phone app.
Okay.
So it allowed Chromecast. So at least it finally has that. Therefore, I could put stuff on television. So it really wasn't until this weekend, namely because, as I said before, Al's thing with the Missouri Star was on Turning Point on BYU TV. So we wanted to check that out. It aired on like Saturday night or Sunday. Saturday night? I think Saturday night at like 11 p.m. So we checked it out the next day. And after that, I've gotten sucked into BYU TV. I didn't think this was going to happen to me. Oh, my gosh. I watched a couple, some Turning Points, some Random Acts. And then we have been sucked into this show that is called Relative Race. And everyone needs to watch it. The whole season's over, but it's all there for streaming.
Wait, what was the name of that show?
Relative Race. Relative Race. It's sort of like The Amazing Race, except it's sponsored by Ancestry.com, and it's got a whole family history element. You've only got four teams, and they give them a little car, and they give them clues and pretty lame challenges as they travel around. And then when they complete them all at the end of every day, they check in by meeting one of their relatives whom the producers have found through them, all these people taking the DNA test that Ancestry offers now. And so they find their relatives. They could be like sixth cousins. They could be first cousins. And the people are sometimes shocked because they meet people they don't even know they're related to, and they stay at their house. Sometimes there are comedic results because a lot of the people they stay with are bumpkins, to say so charitably. But some are not. And
they're relatives, their own.
Yeah, but they don't know who these people are. Like, they don't know their relatives. They find out they're just going to meet a random relative, and they don't know who they are before they get there at the end of every episode. And so then they find out, like, oh, yeah, well, we're connected on this line, you know, from our great-great-grandfather we share or whatever.
Huh.
And sometimes they're more distant, and sometimes there was this one guy. They're in Denver, and he meets a guy who was a former pro baseball player, and they find out they're like first cousins that they didn't even know existed.
Family
he didn't even know he had. Yeah. So
how would you not know it's your first cousin?
I don't know, but maybe we take it for granted in church
Mormon
culture.
How would you not know?
Well, the contestants are not necessarily Mormon. BYU TV is now trying to do wholesome entertainment where they have rules. I think one couple on it's clearly LDS, but I don't think any of the other ones are.
Oh, that's good. I like that. Because then it feels more like real life.
Yeah, I know. Except they all stopped in, almost all of them went through Utah and found relatives there. And that was pretty hilarious. Like, this family's down in Salem, Utah, which is south by Payson in South Utah County.
Uh-huh.
And they meet this family, and the son is like this giant ogre who doesn't talk. It was hilarious. He's like Hodor. It was amazing. And it's just, anyway. Anyway, I've been totally sucked in. It's all I've watched for days. And the host is this guy who sits in his office and kind of, you would love this, Steve. They have to send him pictures. They can't take their phones either. They can't use GPS or anything. So they've got they've got old flip phones. And they have to use maps, but they take pictures on the flip phones and text them. And then the host, when he gets an image to prove that they are like at a certain leg while they're going around, he always like looks at his phone and if they're doing a challenge, he'll be like, "Oh yeah, yeah, that's a bale of hay. Oh yeah."
And that sounds awful.
It's amazing, and I want everyone involved in this show to come on to TWIM and let us talk to them because
that'd be awesome.
I believe it's the greatest thing on the air. You can see how excited I am for it. And so. Relative Race, folks. Get on it.
Relative Race. I think want to get involved with BYU TV more now. Now that you've told me about it, I'm kind of like, I want to get on. I want to be that host looking at a flip phone.
You've got enough going on. You probably could score some kind of a gig like that, hosting some kind of show on BYU TV. I have no doubt.
I think we pitched them a while back on a different show, but I think it got knocked out.
You should try to join Studio C because it's not actually that funny. You can make it funny, Steve.
I've heard some things. They've been doing
it's funny
better.
It's funny like 15% of the time, which is just like Saturday Night Live. But
that's true. Funny is very much, at least for sketch comedy, it is very much you can be like baseball style success numbers. You know,
yeah.
If they're batting 300, you're like they're pretty good. They're a solid player. You know, stand-up comedy is not that way. If you bat 300 in stand-up comedy, you're absolutely in big trouble. Screwed is what I was going to say. I felt like I had to hesitate and censor myself.
I don't condone the more caustic language, but Al says so much worse. So truly, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine. And then speaking of our friend in BYU TV, did you watch the Turning Point thing with Al? and his quilting company, and how he turned around his town.
I think there is something to be said about Al doing this podcast with you every week. I think has really helped him be able to come up with poignant things on the fly, because he came across so well, like right at the start when they were talking about art.
And those of us who know him are shocked that he came across so well spoken.
I know. So probably TwinMeet listeners will be like, what are you talking about? He's incredible at that. But yeah, when I watched him, I was like, wow, this is good, Al. Great job. And I mean, he's sitting there going, yeah, whatever, you know. And I was like, I better not overreact, because this can come across as offensive, you know. Like, and like when my parents go, how's your single life going? And I'm like, pretty good, you know, I'm going on dates. And they're like, wow, that's great, you know. And you're like, hey, quit freaking out about it. Now you're making it sound like it's something that's incredible, you know. So
I think Al's had a little bit of time, though, to hone his story, because they've had a lot of media coverage of their company in the past year and a half. And so he has been able to kind of he's got his stump speech. You know, he knows what he has to do.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't seen it, it's on BYU. The app, you know, it's free. It's BYU TV. It's very easy to access, and it's very entertaining. You get a lot of footage of Al walking around a quiet town in a hoodie. Lots of hoodies.
There is a lot of hoodie, a lot of Al walking. Al very much has a certain walk to him.
He does. He kind of leads with his feet, with his walk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that they maybe picked, I guess they picked up on that, and they're like, we like watching you walk around.
I've been to his, you know, to Al's town in Missouri, and I can't imagine how many pickup shots they were doing there, because you can walk up that whole stretch and back. You're 5 minutes and you're done. You've covered the town. It's
exactly
over. So the poor guy was doing laps. I really liked the footage of him on the lake. That was very pensive. Really drove home the thinking and the feelings for me.
Yeah, the thinking on the park bench at the lake cracked me up, because you could see him get up and clap his hands.
Yes, I saw that.
And I think there was a moment where, you know, in Al's head, he was just like, how long are we having to do this?
Exactly.
And he got up and clapped his hands. He's like, that's it, right? And I think that they kind of were like, yeah, that's okay. That's enough. We don't need you thinking by the lake anymore. But
and other parts we can make fun of. At the end, they show a shot of Al kind of slowly looking up at the camera with what's sort of a smile. It's somewhere in between trying to be serious and trying to be friendly. And while Al is a friendly guy, it's very difficult on camera, especially in a slow-mo shot, to have that perfect face of comfort and friendliness and not come off like someone who's about to rob you. It's a very fine line, but I think he achieved it with aplomb. But it was fun to watch either way. I mean, I know it's not directly related to the show. They don't even mention they're Mormons or anything, but you know they are.
Yeah.
You know it's happening.
You know. I mean, it's BYU TV.
You would hope.
And they get emotional. Like, his sister got emotional at one point. And I think sometimes I wonder.
Yeah.
It seems like Mormons were very much more used to people getting emotional, because we go through it once a month. Or we're like, well, or once a week. I mean, it depends on the.
Are you talking about Fast Sunday, or are you talking about woman problems?
I was doing Fast Sunday.
Okay.
Wait, what were you saying?
Woman problems. Oh, woman female problems. Issues, you know. Okay. And it's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah, because that's universal. Whether or not you're, that might even just be a mammalian thing. Might even be cross species. I don't know. That should be a study. If anybody,
we can really emote with, like, you know, the rhinoceroses and you know, we establish a bond. We can imprint upon animals that way. It's beautiful.
We know how they're feeling.
Just like in Twilight.
We're all mammalians. No, but yeah, like we get emotional. And it feels like maybe we get emotional more quick, a little bit quick, more quickly. Is that the correct phrasing that I want to use? More
that
quickly
is the
than other people.
That is correct. And you think that's because of like testimony meeting and stuff? And how? Because
like we're used to it, maybe? I don't know. Because I could see that people were, and justifiably, they were getting emotional and on the, you know, the BYU TV thing. But yeah, I don't know that I see that in other people. Is this a weird thing to say in other people? That feels like I'm being like.
You other you non-Mormon folk.
Yeah, that's so elitist. All you other underlings who aren't of the faith. That's not how I feel, but at the same time, I do see Mormons cry a lot faster. And maybe people, I don't know if anybody who's not LDS listens to TWIM, but if you're not, let me know. Do Mormons cry fast? It's something I'm curious about.
You know, we could do a poll on Facebook, on our Facebook page. We could do a little survey. Or on Twitter, for example.
It might not even be that interesting.
I could set up a Twitter survey right now. Steve, if you go to another story, while you are pitching it and I'm pretending I'm listening, I will make a poll for our Twitter followers.
Okay, while we're doing this, I thought this was an interesting story that we had highlighted. Let's see. Where is it? Is that Mormons love fantasy books.
Okay.
Where was it? Was it in LDS Living? Yeah.
Just click the link there, buddy. And by the way,
Mormon authors are dominating science fiction and fantasy novels.
And real quick, our exact poll question is going to be, are Mormons more emotional or more prone to crying? Right?
Yeah. Are Mormons quicker to get emotional? Is that the right phrasing? Because that could that could mean that they're quick to get angry too.
Okay, we'll just say crying. Okay,
crying. Okay, so this article on sort of why Mormon authors are dominating science fiction was really intriguing to me, because they say with a lot of conservative religions, there's a taboo against fantasy concepts, magic, and sort of all that stuff. But in general, I mean, it is so huge with Mormons, like the fantasy culture. I don't know if this is just the fact that Utah has a lot more Mormons, but the Comic-Con here in Salt Lake is huge. I think it's the second biggest one in the nation after the original one, you know. In San Diego. Or is it San Diego, right? I don't know where the first one was.
It is in San Diego.
Yeah, yeah. And so I have some theories on why this is. I mean, some of theirs is that the Mormons can conceptualize the fantastic a little bit more because our religion is fairly fantastic in terms of talking about the restoration. I mean, you're told from when you're a kid that you're like, well, Joseph Smith went to the woods and prayed and God and Jesus came. And you're like, yeah. And that to other people is like, well, that's crazy. I mean, you're completely nutsos to have such a fantastic story. So I think that they're saying that Mormons are semi-conditioned to having more fantastic stories seem relatable to them.
Okay.
Which I kind of like that idea. I mean, I love fantasy stuff. I loved Harry Potter. I loved Lord of the Rings. It seems like those two were sort of around the same time, at least movie-wise.
Those are the good ones. I mean, then you get into all the young adult nonsense, all the dystopian blah, blah, blah. It's no fun. Allegiant, Divergent, what's all that?
I didn't watch any of the Divergents or read them either. I don't love, like the Twilight series and stuff like that. But I did love, I don't know, I do love dystopian things at the same time. And I don't know if that also plays into some of Mormon belief also, that the world is eventually going to be... like right before the second coming, that we're all going to be just in a really crappy place.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
At the same time, I think in an interesting way, I don't know if this is contrary to Mormon belief, I don't believe the world to be that bad a place. I kind of think that in general, we're getting along better than, and humankind in general is getting along better than we ever have in history. I could be completely wrong. I mean, I know that there's tons of wars, and I know there's tons of, you know, garbage happening in the Middle East and stuff like that, but it seems like we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, and not just the Middle East. I mean, all over the place. That's an interesting point. I once had this probably well over a year ago. A while ago. I was in a fast and testimony meeting, and a woman who's a teacher got up to bear her testimony and talked about how I think she asked her kids, like, what their outlook was for the future and to talk about it. And the only kid that had a negative view of the future was the Mormon kid in her class.
Oh, interesting.
Because of the stuff we talk about all the time in church, how, you know, everything's going to pot and it's all going to fall apart and it's terrible. And she kind of made the same point to you, where they're like, yeah, there are problems, but for goodness. And this woman's African-American, and she was just like, 30-odd years ago, my husband wouldn't be able to have the priesthood. Like, there's a lot of stuff to celebrate, folks. Like, we don't need to always be pining away for Ozzy and Harriet. Like, that was the pinnacle of Mormonism, right? But those were some interesting points, I thought, because sometimes I think we are too negative.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Is there some kind of fiesta going on next door to you?
I just started hearing this, and I don't know if you're hearing it in my background. Hold on 2 seconds.
You're going to be okay.
Is it okay? Is it pretty loud?
I can hear it, but I also don't care.
It's faint, but yeah, they're... What?
Maybe you could open the window and yell at them like New York style.
Hey, let's fiesta. I don't know. So where Al and I live, there's this big courtyard in the middle, and oh my gosh, sound just echoes around like crazy. And I'm such a dog person. Like, our neighbor's dog is oftentimes outside on the balcony, and so I'll just go, I'll try to get his attention. Holy cow, that is annoying. Another poll. Do you guys yell at your neighbors?
You guys need to move back to the place you used to live in downtown. That was superior, wasn't it? You lived with hipsters. It was great.
It was. There was a lot of hipsters. We do live... Because Utah is a very white place to live. It is the whitest. Maybe Vermont is whiter. I don't know.
It might be whiter.
It seems like Vermont's pretty white. But so living in West Valley is nice because we're not as secluded, I guess. Secluded is not the right word. Because in a way, you're secluded here in West Valley as well. West Valley is highly... There's a lot of... Mexicans, a lot of Polynesians. That's
okay.
And it feels like that's kind of like the only spot that they live in Utah. That's not true either, because there's other spots down south. But at least up in the greater Salt Lake Valley, it's like we're definitely all kind of hidden on the west side. I said we're. I'm not Mexican nor Polynesian. But apparently...
Okay, Utah is not that high. Utah, I just looked it up, according to the census in 2010... 86% white. The whitest is Vermont, as you said. Vermont, Maine, and then West Virginia, then New Hampshire, then Iowa, and then a few other ones. Wyoming, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, Kentucky, even, shockingly enough. So, but you did a good job, though.
Sure enough.
The least white state is not shocking. It's Hawaii, because it's full of Polynesians and Japanese.
There you go. And you know what? I hope I don't sound racist here.
You do, but it's okay. Just keep
going. I definitely do. So apologize to whoever I've offended. I'm trying to do the nicest thing I can, or be as nice as I can. I don't know that it's horrible to live in a completely white state either.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I'm like saying I'm living out in West Valley.
This is a dangerous road.
See? That's the worst. I don't know why that's bad, though. I don't get it. Why would it be bad to say you live in a white place? Like,
it's not bad to say I live in a white place, but it might raise a few eyebrows if you say it is ideal to live in a white place.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to say that. No, I don't think that.
Okay.
But I am going to say it's not bad.
It's probably neither bad nor good.
Because I think sure people like kind of get weird about it, because they're like, oh, I live in a white place or whatever. It's like, whatever, that's who lives here. Don't despair where you
don't
live.
Don't knock
what
a place.
I'm saying.
There,
I'm not saying despairing either way. And I was worried that I was sounding despairing there for a second. Anyways.
I'm going to move on to another story. You're doing
I don't think I'm explaining my point very well. And I don't think any help I won't help it. So yeah, next story.
No. I get what you're basically saying is all too often among white people,
especially people.
they might make jokes and be like, oh, where I live is so white, and while that's I guess culturally fine to do, you're just saying, hey guys, it's okay. It's okay to be like, hey, I live where I live, and it's fine. And it's
just
great.
Be positive about where you live. Doesn't matter.
Don't feel like you have to be so PC that you're knocking a place that you live just because it's not 30% Polynesian or something, right?
We don't have to be a Skittles commercial. We're just whatever.
Anyway, did you see that the angel Moroni got just smacked by lightning at the Bountiful Temple?
Yeah, I was looking at the photos earlier, and it was nuts because his face was completely burnt off.
Dude, he got Gus Fringed, man. He got
Which is weird because I'm thinking that the Angel Moroni statues have to get hit all the time. I mean, they're a lightning rod. They're usually, it's a pretty prominent spot. I mean, how would it not get struck all the time?
I mean, they're designed to be lightning rods. Their very purpose is to conduct lightning strikes away from the rest of a temple. That's why they build them that way. But yeah, he got rocked though. It's a fair point. I would assume this has happened more than once, but he did not take well to it.
I mean, lightning's pretty strong, but
sources say, yeah.
I don't know that I've seen anybody other than some of my comedian friends say, you know, anything. I have a buddy who's, you know, grew up LDS, and so of course now that he is not LDS, everything is very anti-LDS.
Oh, of course. There's no middle ground.
And so he was the first person I saw to post on it. It's like, the Bountiful Temple Moroni, I got struck in the face. And you know, gets what he deserves. He's kind of giving him that type of angle, which was...
Moroni gets what he deserves.
Yeah. Which to me is funny because then it's admitting that Moroni was a person. Because if it's like, if you're anti-LDS, then it's like, oh, okay. Good. So you admit that he was a guy.
So I hope they just leave it up there. I'm sure they'll replace the Moroni, but I think it would be pretty cool because it's original to the temple being dedicated. You know, it's like, leave it up there. Leave it up there as a memento of times gone by. Like, you don't see us fixing the Liberty Bell and filling in the crack.
No way.
Let it be there as a testament to times that were, so that we remember how it protects us. Unless it's by being struck, it somehow renders moot its conducive properties or something like that, and it's, you know, a safety hazard. Oh, but beyond that,
I hadn't thought of that. I bet it.
I don't know if that's a thing.
Highly conductive.
I suck at physics, so I've got nothing. I have no
idea. I wonder what they would do with it. I'm sure they'll repair it, but I don't know. I wouldn't mind it if they didn't.
Okay, let's send them a letter and tell them, guys, we would not mind if you left.
We don't mind.
Granted, love people who do not live in your temple district.
Those people getting married there will be upset, I'm sure.
They might be, but I don't know.
Because it also blew out the back.
Yeah, he got just
went
trashed.
Through the face, it was, busted out the back. So,
I wonder what happened. Did they find shards of Moroni on the ground anywhere, or did it vaporize?
Is that like something that you'll find on eBay now, like shards of Bountiful Temple gold?
Not for the gold, but it's not like you can own an actual temple Moroni. That's not a thing. So that would be kind of cool.
That would be pretty cool. I mean, it is just plated gold, so it might not be that valuable.
Or buy the one that they're going to remove, presumably, the damaged Moroni. What are they going to do with him? We should start a petition, like on change.org or a We the People thing, that we can have it donated to something else. They could put it, you know, anywhere on top of your apartment building, on top of Salt Lake Airport. That could be a great place for it.
I think the airport would be good.
Yeah. So it could wave in the people. I don't know.
Yeah.
A real quick mention here. In other temple news, by the way, open house tickets are now available for the Philadelphia Temple for those of you who want to travel or are on the eastern seaboard of the United States. You can go over actually to our website, thisweekinmormons.com. We have an article up about it. Follow the link and you can reserve your tickets to go through and tour one of the newer temples coming up here in the church. And it's right there in downtown Philly. It's a cool location. Don't have a clue where they're going to have people park because parking is terrible all around the temple.
Yeah.
But
Philly in general is very difficult to park in.
And the funny thing is, in the press release about it, they stress that it isn't a good downtown location. If you know Philly well, it's right off Logan Square. It's right there.
Yeah.
But they talk about how Philly has great public transportation and the SEPTA, which is the subway. But if you've been on Philly's subway, it's actually the kind of subway that people who fear urbanization and urban planning and trains, it's the kind of subway that actually legitimizes those fears. Like, everyone rides the subway in New York, so it's no big deal. DC subway, while it's falling apart, is used by everybody. But Philly subway is the kind that not in my backyard people would actually be like, well, okay. It's an interesting experience is all I'm saying. I've been on it, and there are armed police officers on every car. It's that kind of subway. It's pretty exciting.
I've been to Philly a lot, but I've never taken the subway just because I guess I haven't needed to. But now,
yeah, there's not always a ton of need. I mean, you can hop on the Broad Street line and go a few places, but you don't always need it. So anyway, folks, go reserve your temple things. I will be there, by the way. I think I've already got mine reserved. Late August, you want to meet up with me? We can all get a cheesesteak together.
Yeah.
So you can hang out with Guy Mathias, my son.
He's a good guy.
Who, by the way, Steve, if you remember the last time you were on the show, it was the last time you were on the show when you filled in when I was gone.
It's been a while, yeah.
And you and Al decided that my son's middle name is Mathias, right? You were goofing on his actual middle name and decided it was Mathias. Ha ha ha. Ha ha ha.
Is it Mathias?
So that's fine, whatever. No, it's not Mathias. But then my good friend of the show and a good personal friend, Joe, who runs our social media feeds and stuff, was in D.C. last week. And he was like, how's Guy Mathias doing? And I was like, well, you know, it's not his middle name. And he's a good friend of mine. And he was like, that's not his middle name. And he had no idea. Because of Twim's power, he alone actually thought that was my son's
name. Get out of here. Terrible. That's really funny.
You guys have done terrible work. I'm very upset with
you. Middle name, not Mathias. Okay, well, we've corrected that, hopefully. But his first name is Guy.
Oh, you know what you're... Yeah, it's awesome.
Named after... Guy.
Do you regret making fun of his name before? Because you saw him today. You saw how adorable...
He was pretty cute. I saw him on G-Chat. He just stared at me the whole time, mouth agape. He smiled once, but I think it's because you tickled his foot. And then the rest of the time, he just stared at me, which was always such an interesting thing. My buddy Ryan does a bit on that, where he talks about, you know, that he doesn't trust babies, because who else would just stare at you for an hour? And you do feel slightly uncomfortable, because they're just staring right back at you, and you're kind of like, hi. Yeah, hi. I don't know what to do. How do you fix that moment?
They do just stare. He stares at people all the time, and he'll just stare at them.
I guess you get used to it. Do you just get used to it as a parent? It's like...
Well, I mean, he doesn't stare. I mean, like with us, he doesn't just stare. I do get used to him staring at other people, and sometimes I apologize just because it's fine, but I'm like, sorry. And I'm like, he's not meaning to be rude. He just loves to stare
at people. You apologize for your baby? I'm sorry about his, you know... He's staring at you.
Whatever, Steve. Next story's on you, buddy. Where are you?
That's awesome.
Come on. Let's pick up the pace.
Okay, yeah, we are going kind of slow. So the updated dress standards.
Oh, this is the best thing.
For the for the missionaries. They've updated the female Mormon missionaries' dress standards. They can now wear slacks.
Okay, this is not, like, in general, or is this a thing? Is this...
Now, the reasoning
why
behind the slacks is not... It's not as progressive as you might think. Was that the wrong word to use? But it,
no, that's great. I was very much hoping that the next week we just give the priesthood to women and call it a decade. Say this was great. Good work,
everybody. I like this picture that you guys have on thisweekinmormons.com. They have the example picture that, you know, they give all you guys when you go on your mission. They give you a little, here's some examples of how you can look. And so they have here's some examples of how some sister missionaries can look. And it just shows three sisters in slacks. And they, two out of three, have their hands on their hip. But, I mean, they look fine. They just look like business professionals, really.
It might be three out of three with hands on their hip. The brunette on the right.
That's true.
She's kind of tilted over, but I think that arm is on the hip.
On the hip. Critical news, slacks, and also 100% of female missionaries can put their hands on their hips. But yeah, the reasoning is that it's because of the Zika virus. So the mosquitoes can't get their legs. Granted, I wondered... I guess the tights that they're required to wear, the mosquitoes were still getting through those. So anyways, they just said, where there's that Zika virus, we want the sisters wearing slacks.
Yeah, so the church is just saying, hey, we're going to be proactive about your health and realize that's more important than wearing a skirt, which is...
That makes sense. I would much rather than not get Zika virus.
I think this is the first time, though. Is this the first time in history we've allowed sister missionaries to wear pants?
This is monumental. This is a huge, huge change as far as the attire for the missionaries. Because, yeah, they've never been able to wear slacks before. Now, as discussed earlier, they did allow sunglasses and wide-brimmed hats.
It's happening!
Which you guys reported on earlier.
Yeah, that was last week. The one thing to bear in mind with this, though, is this is not... They still need to wear skirts when attending the temple and during Sunday services, mission conferences, or baptismal services. So this is sort of the equivalent of, for male missionaries, at least on my mission, you know, during the summertime, I would just wear a short-sleeve shirt and my slacks and go about town. But on Sundays or to meetings, we still had to wear our suits no matter what. So the dress is now basically the suit equivalent in this situation.
That makes sense. I mean, I think just logic is always so... It's so great to see when we're just like, yeah, well, logically, you guys should wear pants. On my mission, I went to Montreal, and we actually wore full-on parkas, which is not modeled in the here's what you should wear photos.
Oh my gosh.
Always the trench coats and the scarves and the hats. But we wore huge parkas because we were in Canada and it was freezing. And our mission president just kind of said, look, I'd rather you guys not freeze to death. So go ahead, buy a conservative parka. And that's what the businessmen wore there too. You'd see businessmen who would go to work wearing a suit, but then they'd have snow boots up to their knees, with their suit pants tucked into their snowshoes, which was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And so that was also a thing.
So do you still speak weird 17th century French like they speak in Canada?
With the Québécois accent?
You got all that going on?
I guess. Whenever I do try to speak French with people, some people point out that they're like, wow, you have a French-Canadian accent. Just some of the ways they say things. My favorite phrase that I learned while I was there is, when you don't have what you love, you gotta love what you have. Which in Québécois, they would say, quand tu n'as pas ce que t'aimes, il faut que t'aimes ce que t'as. Which is very like...
That sounded like Klingon. That's
Yeah, it's and I don't know if I even said it wrong, but the guy who taught me it, Frère Garayepi, who was up in an area called Repentigny, which is just east of the island, was very that way. He loved to talk super fast and very slurry. And so he'd be like, oh, wipe it after my, repeat after me. And he'd be like, quand tu n'as pas ce que t'aimes, il faut que t'aimes ce que t'as. And I was like, whoa, okay, what is that? And you slow it down and you realize what he's saying. But so there, you can say that to somebody else at some point. And they go, okay, that's great. Which I don't know that I love that phrase. When you don't have what you love, you gotta love what you have.
Good.
Anyways,
I like that's where we got in the end. Like, and you know, and lastly, I don't even know if I like that phrase. Like,
I don't even know
if that's worth keeping around.
No,
it's a bum phrase.
Yeah, doesn't seem like it's a very progressive phrase. It's very like, give up.
So speaking of some missionary stuff, over at Vocative, which is a very skewed website, they have a kind of pointless article called Leaked, Mormon Missionary Guide to Social Media, a rare glimpse into one of the Mormon Church's most restrictive and secretive institutions. It's like they think we're Opus Dei or something. That's not what's going on here, people. So they say on Tuesday night, a member of the LDS Church leaked a draft of a guide for how Mormon missionaries can use technology and the internet. The 32-page document provides a glimpse into the insular, restrictive life of the LDS members who volunteer to serve on proselytizing and humanitarian missions. Yeah, well, yeah, okay. And then in the end, they really, you know, they try to give us the gotcha with the specifics of social media. I don't think there's anything that wild here, Steve. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like this is both common sense and not a secret at all. Like if you ask the elders in your ward to show you the guidelines for social media, they just say, yeah, okay, here it is. This is not like the secret code, you know, at which they abide. This is very simple. Always sit where you can see your companion's screen. That was a rule for computers on my mission. Be aware of your companion's contacts, messages, and communications. Duh. Don't post, comment, or view anything without your companion reviewing it first. That's marketing 101. You always have somebody review the message. Use a profile picture that reflects your calling. So yeah, change it because you're a missionary now. Do not access any Facebook apps or games. That's probably been a problem, honestly. I could imagine that.
Oh, for sure. People love games.
Farmville has been a problem.
Leave groups. I made the classic online mistake of reading the comments section.
You can't do that.
A huge mistake. I don't know why it is that only commenters are always the worst, but this Chris Hitchens, and now Chris Hitchens also happens to have the name of Chris Hitchens ex Mo. Adorable.
He's proud. It's like I said, it's one or the other. You can't. There's no middle ground when you leave the church.
You gotta let everybody know. Which is, his comment is, how to manipulate people with lower educations, plural, and problems with loneliness and self-esteem. I wish self-esteem was plural. Dang it. Missed an opportunity there, Chris Hitchens. This is how to manipulate people with the lower educations. Okay. I mean, I guess we have more than one education. You have your primary and your secondary and your
and your tertiary and all these.
Your tertiary education.
Absolutely. You got trade school, you know.
A lot of people using the cult word. I looked up the word cult the other day and found it to be not. Now there's, you know, of course, as with every word, there's multiple connotations. But the general connotation was actually fairly positive. I was like, oh, I wouldn't mind being called a cult if that's what everyone's saying it is. But the connotation is usually that it's a, you know, restrictive thought type of thing. But the first few definitions on dictionary.com were actually pretty good for cult.
Okay.
I was like, I'm totally pro that. You can call me a cult at any time. Anyways.
All right, last bit of missionary news here, I think. So Elder Norby, who is the senior missionary who was injured in the Brussels attack a few months ago, made it back to the States about a month or so ago, and now he's been released and released from the hospital, going home. Everything's going to be okay. Just an update on Elder Norby. He was probably injured more than any of them, had shrapnel in his leg, and now he's going to be okay. Good for you.
That's good news. He's the most positive kid on the planet, and his story went so viral it was cute.
Elder Norby, the senior missionary, was cute.
Oh, shoot. Maybe I'm mixing up somebody.
Steve, we're talking about the wrong different people here.
Dang it. I was thinking of that kid. Wasn't there a kid? He had like... Now I can help in the story.
Yeah, his name is David Archuleta. Great kid. Very nice.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
He's very, very nice.
Top notch.
Anyway, we've only got a few other things here. You can throw something you want up there, Steve, and we'll tie it off. Okay, what we got here?
Let's see. Let's talk about opioid addiction in Utah. We'll finish that.
Here's the positive note. There we go.
I always love the positive stories. The opioid addiction in Utah. This article on The Guardian over in the UK talks a little bit about how there's these people who exist who don't smoke or drink coffee and never use illegal drugs, and yet they're an addict for most of their life.
How
did because they were prescribed opioids. Now, this is interesting because I don't know how much of it, Jeff and I talked a little bit about this before, because in the church sometimes we have a bit of a inside joke, I think, for being like, you can this, but you can't this, and you can this, but you can't this. And then people get so like Law of Moses on the rules that they lose track. And I mean, I don't know this lady, and so let's ignore that this, I'm not talking about this individual in her circumstance, but I kind of think if you have that just general feeling of like, I know what is good for my body and what's bad for my body, then you'll be able to discern, because a doctor isn't going to always prescribe what's best for you. In my opinion.
Steve, are you a libertarian? You can say so now. It's okay.
Am I a libertarian? I don't know. I'm a Steve. I have a lot of very mixed views, I think. So I'm a little bit of everything. But yeah, I don't think that, I just don't think that we should be as trusting of everyone.
Well, yeah, we can't we can't always leave like an apparatus to do it for us. We still have to be ourselves and make our own decisions and be responsible for said decisions, I suppose.
Yeah. I love to thine own self be true. I love that. And I really think that you'll be able to make better decisions.
This is a good read, though, because it does call into question whether sort of our culture of needing to be perfect kind of exacerbates the opioid problem in Utah. So Utah has one of the highest rates of opioid abuse in the country, primarily related to OxyContin. That's the main culprit here that's causing the problems. And this article goes into length about people who have died. You know, a man's son died from a prescription drug overdose. And they talk about their frustrations and how it's like, well, we're all trying to put on a shiny face and say, it's okay, everything's okay. And by so doing, we are kind of denying ourselves a chance to get real about something that's a very serious problem in the area. So I don't know. It's a good read. I mean, it has a slant. There's an agenda there, but I think it's definitely worth reading and thinking about.
Yeah, that is a ridiculously difficult part, especially in Utah, feeling like you got to be perfect a little bit.
Beautiful. Well, I think we're going to call it, folks. Steve, other than Ragnar racing and wedding officiating, anything going on with you? You got any comedy gigs coming up? Any other things people should be looking for?
You know what? Right now, I only have private shows that are on my schedule. So I have some
private shows. Now, is this like Adobe pays you to come to their company party and you entertain people?
Yeah. You know what? I got an email yesterday from an old folks home. This is no joke. I got an email from a 90-year-old lady yesterday who says, I saw you at a show recently, and she used the word giggled. Let me see if I can even open up her email. But she said, I talked to the folks at my facility. She lives in an old folks home, and she said, we'd really love to have you. So I might be playing an old folks home.
Have to do it. That'll honestly be, aside from it being sounding kind of funny, you'll actually probably have a pretty, a moving experience, because people are in these homes and it's they need joy sometimes. So
I mean, they need joy. I think it'd be fun to just to be able to say that I played an old folks home. Pretty funny. So
then you can start touring all the old folks' homes and all the land. Next thing you know, you're going to be going down to like Parowan. Be like, this is the dream, folks. I'm at the old folks' home right here in Parowan. I'll be in Cedar City next weekend, and this is the dream. Richfield the following weekend after that.
Well,
that's exciting. You'll have to let us know how it goes. Maybe we can get on Periscope or something, and we can do a live feed for TWIM. And
I really think we should, do something
extend
live.
Extend the brand.
Be cool, very man. Exciting. Yeah, it looks like...
And Do you have any online outlets where people should follow you?
You can follow me on. I seem to use Instagram a lot more than the other ones. So just Steve Solberg, STEVESOELBERG, and then of course Facebook. Feel free to follow me on there. I post on there on occasion, and then I haven't figured out Snapchat yet.
Don't even bother with it.
All I ever do is just turn myself into a dog and lick the screen. And I've never done anything beyond that. So.
And speaking of social media, folks, you can find us on all of the usual outlets, primarily on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for This Week in Mormons. But we're also on YouTube and elsewhere. So look for that. And of course, send us your comments, your thoughts. If you have news stories, if you have things that you think we need to be made aware of, send us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons.com. And, you know, we'll check them out. We always appreciate you getting with us and helping us be more aware of things. And lastly, I'd like to do a quick plug. If you're interested in writing for This Week in Mormons, I am always willing and capable and eager to host additional writers to help you be a contributor to TWIM. Shoot me an email if you want Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at thisweekinmormons.com. Be happy to talk with you about it. Maybe we can hook that up. And also... Also, we are looking as well for working mothers or non-working mothers or mothers and their views on working and how it relates to Mormonism. We're looking on getting a panel set up for that. If you're interested, also send us an email. I've done enough plugs for now. The time is far spent. It is time to go. So I would like to thank Steve Solberg for joining me this week. It's been a gas, my friend. Thank you for taking the time to do it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Anytime, pal. Yeah. All right, folks, so thanks for taking the time to tune in. We don't know when Al will ever return if he does. And you know what? I don't think we care. I think this has taught us all that we don't care, but we really do. Anyway, thanks for taking the time to listen to TWIM, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, have a great week, and we'll be back with you in a week from now. See you later. Bye-bye.